Cape Breton is attached to the rest of Nova Scotia with a causeway, the Swinging Bridge, since I think it was around 1952, just roughly. Before that, it was pretty isolated. They had a ferry going on and off, but the island itself has preserved a lot of the culture of the people who landed there in the 1700s and 1800s. And so there are Mi'kmaq, Acadian, and Scottish and Irish cultures, and I think a little Italian too, but the dominant ethnic group that came was the Gaelic-speaking Catholics from Scotland, basically, from the Highlands and Islands, and that's where all of my relatives come from. And I grew up hearing this kind of music played in my home, and I was dragged to every Cayley concert and dance that you could imagine going to, because my parents are musicians. And, yeah, so the island itself, you know, we have the typical four seasons, I guess, and there isn't, like, a heck of a lot to do there outside of getting together and playing music or, you know, whatever else you do, play games and stuff. And but you don't have a lot of nightclubs or anything like that. So there was a lot of community activity, and there still is. And, yeah, what else do you want to know?
Any big towns? I keep hearing about a place with the funny name of Mabu.
Okay, Mabu.
Mabu.
That's where my dad grew up there. And that's a town, I wonder how many people are in that town now. A few hundred, maybe even more than 1,000. I'm not very good with numbers like that, but yeah, the thing you probably hear about there is the Red Shoe Pub.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of a staple place for locals and tourists to go hear music of this kind and other kinds too, and they have great food, and just a really happy, cheery place and festive, and it's a seasonal pub, so it opens in, I think it's the 1st of June, and closes right after Celtic Colors Festival in October.
So your family was already famous for music making, and music is sort of a tourist industry there. Were you pressured at all to pick up the fiddle and start joining the band really early?
No, I wasn't. And actually, it's funny because when I was growing up, I thought fiddle wasn't very cool at all. Nobody played fiddle at my school. Well, there were like three or four of us that secretly liked it, I guess. Maybe not secretly, but it's not like you saw it all the time at school. But when I'd come home from school, sometimes before anyone else, I'd rush home, and before anyone else would get home, I'd take the fiddle out from under the bed and play a couple of tunes. And then I'd get frustrated and I wouldn't touch it for months. And nobody pressured me. They kind of let me do my thing, you know. I liked hockey and I liked other things. And then when I moved away when I was 21, I really kind of got, I wasn't homesick as much as I was tune sick. I was missing the music, and I had my fiddle there. And that's when I like kind of did a 180, and I was calling home all the time asking my parents, am I playing this right? And what about this tune? And probably driving them crazy for hours on the phone trying to make sure I was doing things up to par, you know.
It is one of those musical languages that it's hard to get if you don't grow up there. And so you would have to keep going back to the source and replenishing yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also would go out to Cayley's, and the PEI, the people that I hung out with there, they really knew a lot of Cape Breton music and played a lot of Cape Breton music. And I guess it's not Cape Breton, just Cape Breton, but we're all kind of from the same groups, you know, so they had the same repertoires, and so I was lucky that way. I got to go to Cayley's and practice and play in front of people, and I don't know, get my stamina going.
Is this when you started playing out more and starting to travel even further away and join festivals and things like that?
Yeah, it was after when I came home from there. I went to school there for 2 years. And when I came home, I decided I'd make an album. Oh, actually, no, it was in between my 2 years I made the album, I think. And then that's when I started playing for more dances. And then I started playing festivals a little bit here and there and doing more little tours of concerts and stuff.
On the radio show, we love the Beaton family of Mabu from
yeah.
Smithsonian Folkways. Now, that's actually not too long ago. It's from 2007. So would you tell me about getting together for that one?
Yeah, well, from what I remember, it was Bert Feintuck, who was a music ethnologist or something like that. Ethnomusicologist. I always get that backwards. And he was doing projects for Smithsonian, and he wanted to do the Beaton family. He put out some recordings, too, with other, like, kind of themed recordings, and one was called The Heart of Cape Breton, and then there was a lot of different people playing for dances and live concerts and stuff. And he and my parents are very good friends, and me, too, now. I'm all grown up, I guess. But he was the one who was kind of putting this together. And so there was my grandmother, who was on the Beatons of Mabu, the original record that came out in 1977. And then my dad and my mom and my cousin Glenn Graham and his mother Mary, who'd be my dad's sister. My cousin Rodney McDonald, who was a son of another sister of my dad's, Elizabeth Ann. And then my sister, did she dance on it? I think she danced on it, and I played fiddle as well. And I hope I didn't forget anybody. But oh, my dad! I think I said him.
Yeah, I think you mentioned.
Anyway,
yeah.
So we had a lot of like four fiddle numbers, and then we each played the solo number, and you know, little different combinations of the family.
I know, but it's like the Smithsonian. That must have been such a, wow, we're being put down in history, right?
It's so funny because I never knew what the Smithsonian was until that album. So I didn't realize, you know, they were like, we're doing this album. And I was like, okay, I just have like a recording bug. I want to record it all the time. And so this was like, yay, another project. And then, you know, then I find out what was actually going on. Oh, no pressure.
Well, that
I'm gonna be there forever.
That takes us up to your most recent record, right? Little Black Book is the 2011 release, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Here, you are not only playing fiddle, but you're playing the piano accompaniment, which I find one of the most exciting parts of Cape Breton style music as well. So many ways to spice up a tune.
It's really one of the things that separates Cape Breton music from other styles of music, because the style of piano is so unique, and every piano player has a different kind of sound. Like there's, I don't know how to explain it. I guess every fiddler does too, but there's something about the piano playing that's so, it's so special. It's got a kind of ragtimey feel to it at times, and then it's got, I don't know, it's just a real rhythm, really kind of dancey, I guess. Well, a lot of our music is related to the step dancing, so.
Was that your father or your mother that you would have picked that up from?
The piano?
Yeah.
My mom's a piano player. And but so are a lot of others in my family. But my mom's, my mom was Buddy McMaster's sister. And so growing up, Buddy would have, he kind of went through all the sisters as accompanists. One would get married and then the next one would step up to the piano and then she'd get married and the next one would come along. And it just kind of went like that. And then my father's brother, Joey, played with Buddy as well. I guess after they were all married, mom's the baby, so after she married my dad, then, you know, I'm sure Buddy had plenty of other accompanists as well, but that's kind of where they got their start and the way I can kind of picture it in my head, you know.
Buddy passed away, I think, September or August.
In August.
I read some accounts of how the whole population of the community came out to honor him. Did you make it back home for that?
Yeah. I just made it home for the funeral. It was of course, it was sad. It's like the end of an era when someone like him, besides that he was an amazing fiddler, but he was just such a nice, humble man. And I don't know, he was just wonderful. And I was really happy to get home for that funeral because so many of our family came from all over to be there, from all over the place, in the States and other places, and just came home. And although it was sad, it was really nice to see everyone. It takes something like that sometimes to get everyone together. And, I don't know. And the community as well. Everyone was fantastic. And there were a lot of nice tunes.
A lot of times when you play this music in front of other people, especially when you have a chance to talk to them face to face, you kind of honor or you refer to other people who taught you the tune or people who were identified with the tune. And so you'll probably talk about Buddy and other great players when you continue performing and keeping their music out there, you know?
Yeah, it's all part of the tradition, passing it down. And a big part, too, of our music is the story behind the tune. And a lot of tunes are written for people or people who dance or someone, you know, people who do something special for someone or whatever. It's a way to kind of honor them or remind people of what a person they were. It's not always about the fiddler and the tune itself, but kind of what was the inspiration behind that.
I want to ask you about another great player, a living legend now, and she lives in Chicago. Her name is Liz Carroll, and you wrote a tune for her.
I love Liz Carroll.
Tell me about your interactions with Liz Carroll.
Oh, my. Well, when did I meet Liz? I must have met her in Celtic Connections, maybe, in Scotland. Must be close to 10 years ago. And well, I've heard of her long before that, but it was when I finally got to hear her live. And since then, we've been running into each other at different festivals and camps. And I love her tunes. We're both composers. She's a monster composer. And I just enjoy her humor as well. She's got good stories. And I love Irish people in general. They're always so much fun to hang around with. And this summer I started in Goderich. We both taught and played the festival there, and it was just really nice to get to hang out with her. And I don't know what else to tell you except that I have huge respect for her and her music, but her as a person as well. She's very kind.
Yeah.
And generous with her music.
You and she may not share the same exact style of fiddling, but you sure do have in common the solo fiddling and writing your own tunes. And I imagine she's something of a role model for you in that.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So how long have you been writing tunes?
I actually wrote tunes when I was a kid. My dad would write them out for me because I didn't really know how at the time, but I guess I was probably 10 when I wrote my first tune, maybe. And so that's 25 years now.
Do you tend to put them into sets? Like they go from waltz, jig, reel, or there's something about Cape Breton where you put different tempos together, different style tunes together.
Yeah, we do. Usually we start with a march and then go into strathspeys and then into reels. So that's kind of the typical build-up of a set. And usually we don't, except for recordings that I do, and most people, we don't play the same tunes every time. It's always mix and match. So I won't play the same waltz with the same strathspey with the same reels. It's always different.
Well, here's a good time to talk about Tyson Chen, who will be the pianist on the concert. And how do you and he coordinate these split-second changes of tempo and feel?
Piano players are kind of magical. They just kind of have to instinctually know. and feel what you're going to do and follow. And so we don't switch keys when that's happening, which is one thing that's good. So usually there's some kind of signal with the foot. If you've ever seen a Cape Breton fiddler, we all work our feet pretty hard. And the foot sometimes starts changing in the bar before the actual tempo change. It's a little bit of a warning, like a cue. But also, it's for us to make the transition smooth so it doesn't just go, and then go on, you know? It's like we have a kind of a flow to it that sort of happens, a combination of the bow and the foot doing its thing.
How did you get to know Tyson Chen?
Tyson moved to Cape Breton, I don't know what year it was, but I would just see him at the Red Shoe and at house parties and stuff. And at the jam they have at the Red Shoe and stuff like that. And then this year, because I live in Montreal now, and Tyson was living in Ottawa, and somebody asked me to fill in for a fiddler that wasn't feeling well for a benefit that was going on and that Tyson was the piano player for. And when I got there and we played, he told me he kind of wrote me an email and afterwards, and it was fun. And he said he was available for traveling and stuff. And I said, oh, great. Well, maybe we'll do that. So there were a couple of little things that I had that I hadn't booked anyone for yet. And I thought, well, this would be great because I could pick him up on the way and we'll just go.
And, of course, Dick Hensold is a big attraction on the concert as well, mm-hmm. Northumbrian piper. I believe he lives in mm-hmm. I believe he lives in the States, in Minneapolis area or
In St. Paul.
In St. Paul. So when you guys get together, does the music work together? Does it clash? Do you do separate parts of the concert by yourselves?
Oh, it's mostly together what we do. Dick had applied for a grant for me to come out to St. Paul and to work out a show and do some workshops and do some kind of Cape Breton, I don't know what the word is, but talks and stuff like that, to try and kind of get more Cape Breton interest maybe in the area. And so once we had that put together, we thought, well, we might as well do it more than just in this area. Let's go places and do it. So he had put together, we had both picked some tunes, and he had some stuff that he wanted me to learn, and there were some tunes we had in common that were kind of old tunes, and then some of each of our own compositions. And we just put a show together based on that. We each have one or two solos in the show, but most of it is stuff we arranged together. You'll see an array of instruments and hear a few silly stories, and it'll be a nice, fun evening of tunes and tales.
Andrea, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Kara.